Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Okay, so, you know, looking at the role of animals in our lives, I don't think that I would have come through this year in as, well, I say relative mental stability. Mental stability is a relative term, I guess. but without my best friend, my companion, her name is Maya. She has four legs and fur. She's an English Bull Terrier. And the role of animals in our lives, I think if you have an animal, you realize what a huge role they play. And I wanted to explore that a little bit more and the role of animals in our lives. So I contacted a lady who's certainly no stranger to Chai FM. She's the owner of Animal Handling Support Systems, and her name is Michelle Mould. She joins me on the line right now. Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
Oh, good to speak to you. How's it going?
Okay, thank God. And by you?
Yep, very good. Thank you. Michelle, I was just reflecting on the role that my pooch has definitely played a huge role in keeping me relatively sane this year, especially because I do live in isolation. But talk to me about the role of animals and what animals offer us in terms of comfort. And then I want to talk about how you also apply, you know, the different things that you do with the animal services.
Okay. First of all, animals, we've got to acknowledge that animals, what they give us is total unconditional love. They don't judge us. They are there for us. They absolutely adore us. They worship us. And wow, I mean, it's something quite amazing. Humans don't do that to us. Animals provide all of this. And the sooner we realize this, acknowledge it, and are grateful for it, the better for all of us.
Yeah. So how do you use animals in terms of your business? Because it is actually your business.
To an extent, I've got a few different sort of arms to my business. The one is the sale of the humane equipment for people who professionally work with animals all the time. The second is that I provide training for various animal welfares, in which I train their staff how to deal with animals that are potentially aggressive, and how to use equipment correctly so to minimize any risk to yourself and to the animal. And then I also do behavioral consultations. I am a registered and accredited senior behaviorist. And I've...
What do you mean, animal behavior or human behavior? Because then I think the government should get you to talk to some human beings about their behavior during COVID.
Sure, tell me about it. At least animals are compliant, aren't they? the last thing that I've been doing sort of on and off for a while is basically animals for emotional support. So we've got a whole lot of categories in South Africa. We've only got two organizations that actually do this type of work. The first is the Guide Dog Association of South Africa, which obviously we know produces guide dogs for the blind. Then they are also producing a service dog, which is primarily for somebody who has a physical disability, and the dog is there to assist them to help them maintain their lifestyle. The dog can pick up things. The dog can open doors. The dog can close doors. And the dog also becomes a bit of a social lubricant as well. It's quite phenomenal. It gives a person independence. And generally, people who have a physical disability, not all of them are comfortable with where they are and what they are, and they are concerned about people looking at them and making comments. And if they've actually got a dog working with them, it just changes all of that, because everybody wants to interact with the dog, unless, of course, they're phobic about the dog. The other thing that Guide Dog Association is doing is they're now doing autism support dogs.
Yes, I saw that. And epilepsy and diabetes. These are all service dogs that can sniff out.
Not with them at the moment. Yeah. Honey's Garden is doing the diabetic alert.
Yeah.
And they are doing seizure support. Now, there's a difference between a seizure support dog and a seizure alert dog. It's very difficult to train a dog to actually detect a seizure. Most dogs that indicate it, normally indicate it by themselves. Normally a dog that's very, very empathetic and can pick up on the changes, the physiological changes and the chemical changes in their human, and will indicate to the person that something, so that an episode is about to happen, and the person can then get ready to cope with the seizure with the dog assisting them. Your seizure support dog is the dog that, once you start having the seizure, will try and assist you, give what we call deep massage by lying on you, applying pressure, and if necessary, getting assistance and calling somebody to come and help you. We've also got the hearing dogs for the deaf that Honey's Garden have brought out right now, which is phenomenal. They also have a psychiatric support dog. And that's for people with post-traumatic stress disorder and also people that have got a bit of paranoia and become very agitated, very aggressive, maybe people that are bipolar. And this provides tactile stimulation that serves as a physical buffer when they're in a public environment. You can actually even train these dogs to remind the handler to take medication.
That is fascinating.
And the other thing that's happening right now, which is so exciting, is that by the Teddy Bear Clinic, animals are now being used in courtrooms to make the child feel more secure, to give the child that support, and to make them know that there's something on their side that isn't judging them whatsoever. So we're using dogs at this moment in time, and I was at a conference 2 years ago with the Jelly Bean Foundation, and one of the Muslim social workers was concerned because they consider dogs haram, and therefore the children from their community and their faith cannot get involved in something like this. So we came up with the concept of training a cat, and we just waiting for the courts to reopen, and we have got an Abyssinian cat that was very kindly donated by a veterinarian. And this cat is just awesome. You put a harness on him, and he'll go in, and he'll lie down with him, tuck his little paws under his body, and just watch what's going on, and allow himself to be petted and touched,
which is
required.
I'm really surprised about the cat, because everybody knows how judgmental cats are.
I find that I did try with the previous cat, which didn't work. I found the Abyssinian is very dog-like, and they're very empathetic and they're very sensitive to emotion.
Wow.
And, your big thing, obviously, is the whole time that you're doing this, you need somebody to facilitate it, because if a child gets extremely agitated and grabs the cat, it's a cat.
Yeah.
It could react adversely. So the whole time you've got somebody who is observing the child, and then somebody who's obviously working with the cat, which obviously I do because it's my cat and I've trained it, and I certainly wouldn't hand it over to somebody else for those purposes.
Sure. That's absolutely fascinating, Michelle. So explain to me, what happens if you take an emotional support dog? So you've got a child who's testifying, or somebody who's testifying in a very traumatic case in court, and
do they meet the animal first? What they do is they set up a situation whereby you have a mock setup of the courtroom, so the child knows what the procedures are. This is what the Teddy Bear Clinic does. They get involved, they show the child, this is going to be the public prosecutor, this is going to be the policeman, this is going to be the accused, etc., etc. And what the guys do from these organizations that assist is they bring in their dogs, and the dogs each fulfill one of these roles. So the child sees the dog being the policeman, the child sees the dog as being the public prosecutor, etc., etc. And that is their first introduction to the dogs. And then they're allowed to interact with those dogs and get comfort from those dogs. The day that they come to court, there will only be the one dog that is there to give the emotional support to the child.
Hmm. Absolutely fascinating. Fascinating. What have you learned about animals in your work, Michelle?
I've learned that we just don't know enough about them, and we should actually try and be more like them, because they've got so much to teach us. They've got so much to teach us, from empathy, acceptance, love, care, devotion, loyalty, which a lot of these traits we're unfortunately missing amongst humans. And I don't think we'll ever stop learning what animals can give us. But the main thing is to remember that what they give us is unconditional.
Yeah, it's fascinating, especially with dogs. I received an email earlier, or a message earlier, that says, did I know that the Torah says, let me just try and find it. But if you want to find the the essence of something, you go back to the first time that it was mentioned in the Torah. So the first time that a dog is mentioned in the Torah is, by the way, do you know when that is, Mish?
Is that not the one where, what was her name, when they licked the blood, her blood from the cobblestones on the ground?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Okay. There's another mention.
No, where, before that.
There is a second mention where where the dogs lick up the blood of this, I don't know what she was, but she was obviously pretty evil, and for that the dogs are blessed.
Oh, okay. So the first time that, I've actually never heard of that story, but, the first time that dogs are mentioned in the Torah is after Cain kills Abel. He is sent out of the garden. God marks him, and he is set to wander the earth. And, of course, he's the first murderer in history. He brought death to mankind and to humanity. And so he's wandering, and he calls out to God after many years of wandering, and he says, please, people see me, and I'm an aberration. They see my mark. They know who I am. Everybody on the planet knows who I am. I'm so lonely. Help me. Help me. I take my punishment, but help me. And so God sends him a dog. And and that is the first time that a dog is mentioned.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Also, if you look at the gematria for the word for dog, so a dog in Hebrew is kelev, kalev from the heart.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Is kalev. I mean, the translation is from the heart. That's what a dog is. So it's absolutely fascinating. It's
You know, I mean, you've known me for a long time, and you know my whole feeling on animals, full stop. And I'm a firm believer in that if we just take the example of animals and we start trying to give what they give, the world would be a far better place. It really, really would.
Yeah. Listen, I don't think that we've really explored the human-animal interactions. I do know. I mean, I had programs in education programs in the past, which is why I owned a zoo. And just the stories. I mean, I had a little Cameroon dwarf goat. Okay, not for the faint-hearted, I have to say, because they're very wild. You know what? They're actually not so smelly. Especially the females. They don't have like that musky odor. But the male, he was absolutely impossible with other males. And we went to a school for that is for children with disabilities. And you've got kids who have the mental disabilities and you have children who have physical disabilities. And the kids with the physical disabilities every day at around about 11 or 11:30 would go and lie down. And Siggy would be outside on jumping on the jungle gyms and, you know, playing with the other kids. But when 11:30 came and these children with physical disabilities went inside to lie down, he would go and lie down with them. And the fact that this animal, who was using his own free will to lie down with these children with physical disabilities, the teacher said, it's incredible. She said, it has done so much for the kids. It's very special.
So just by the way, that thing was about Jezebel, by the way. When Elijah condemned
Jezebel. Okay.
Yes, it was Jezebel. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Her death was decreed, and her corpse was to be devoured by the dogs.
Yes.
Not that positive, but anyway, yeah.
Okay. It's a message here from Benji Schleider. Okay. So my Hebrew grammar, Benji, he's picking me out for my Hebrew grammar. Mike is calling me out on my Hebrew grammar. Okay, I'm sorry. That's what it is. All right. So, Benji, I will go through your messages and I'll see. Okay. So he says, by Cain, correct me if I'm wrong, sending him a dog is a midrash, not the Torah. Yes, it is a midrash. Yes, it's a midrash on the Torah. Yes. Okay. Thank you so much. But it's interesting all the same, right?
Well, the other thing is, in the States at the moment, I was very fortunate to be in Texas for a working dog seminar, and I met somebody who was involved in training miniature horses as guiding creatures for the blind, for the partially sighted.
Wow.
And he said it's just the same thing. The ability to grasp the situation and to work with the person and overcome their own instincts as equines, which is flight animals, is quite phenomenal. They bond to their person, and they, no matter what, they stay with their person.
That's absolutely amazing.
Absolutely, absolutely amazing. The only problem that we've got at this moment in time is that everybody and his brother can jump up and down right now and shout, "I've got an emotional support animal," or "I've got a therapy dog," because we don't have a body that actually governs registration of these animals. So those of us who work with this type of animal normally work with the psychiatrist and the psychologist, if the child has one, and their medical therapist in order to get the animal recognized as an animal that performs a specific role for the emotional or physical or both well-being of that person.
Do emotional support dogs have to have special qualities? I mean, is there training involved aside from obedience?
What we like to do with the dog is obviously the dog has to be assessed very carefully. The dog has to have the right temperament. No matter how good the dog's temperament, it's the whole thing comes down to the matching. Well, let's not talk about a dog. Let's just talk about an animal. The matching of that animal to the person has to be done very, very carefully, which is why you do need a medical professional involved in that. Because no matter how good that dog is, if the person does something that can cause physical damage to the animal might react adversely. There's always that little risk. It's an animal. We've got to acknowledge that. But yet I've seen video footage of people having terrible seizures where they are beating the dog, while they're having the seizure. Obviously, they're not aware that they're doing that. And I've seen these dogs take it. They just brace their bodies, turn their bodies, and lean into the person and stay there until it's all over. Just phenomenal. You know, the instinct would be to get up and run away.
Amazing. Amazing. Mm. All right, Michelle. One last question. If I want to apply for an emotional support dog, how do I do that?
Well, the logical thing to do is contact somebody who's involved with it.
Yeah.
So all that there is at the moment, there are a few behaviorists that are involved with that. There's also a course available called Animal. It's by an organization that's gracious. I can't think of their name right now, and it's gone straight out of my head. Dr. Freddie Hurley has, and Dr. Hannes Slubbert have got an organization where you can do a course, correspondence course to them for what they call animal, it's not animal support or anything like that. It's basically an animal activities, which covers the whole thing of emotional support and all this type of thing, and that would train you and give you the background for it. But for people that actually train the dogs, Guide Dog Association, Honey's Garden, and then there, as I said, one or two behaviorists that are involved in this type of thing. So one could then contact the Animal Behaviorist Consultants of South Africa and find out who is involved with it.
Yeah, I mean, this raises so many other questions. I mean, like if I had to, I don't know, pretend that my dog was obedient and, register her as an emotional support therapy dog, would I be allowed to travel overseas with her? Or would there still be quarantines and all of that?
Yeah. At this moment in time, there would still be because we haven't got onto the whole passport system with South Africa isn't ironed out yet. And the whole thing comes down to the actual certification of the dog because, as I said, in South Africa, we don't have an official body that can certify them. So the certification is we use that in inverted commas. You would then have a letter from the veterinarian, from the psychiatrist and from the person who trained the dog to say, this is what the dog is capable of doing. But that doesn't automatically make the animal a service dog as such.
Michelle Moll, thank you so much for the time. Thank you for, I found it very inspiring that dogs and animals are actually being used in these different ways to detect diabetes and autism and, you know,
Dr. Dominique Grandjean of the French Fire Brigade was the first person to train dogs for COVID alert and detection.
Isn't that incredible?
Yes. It's absolutely amazing. They did the program I think in conjunction with Bahrain. And dogs are out there. They're busy detecting and sensing and sniffing.
Isn't that unbelievable? It's just wonderful. And thank you for just keeping me updated. Thanks for keeping all of us updated, actually.
Please, pleasure.
Michelle Moll, you just have a wonderful day. God bless.
You too. God
cheers, bless. Cheers. Bye. So that's Michelle Moll. She's the owner at Animal Handling Support Systems. Isn't it fascinating to see the different ways that that dogs are helping humanity? I think it's wonderful, and it really is a very, very positive symbiotic relationship.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.